What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports and Medicine Broadcast, episode 34, the Sports Medicine Team for October 31st, 2012. I'm going to start off with a big happy Halloween. This is being recorded on Halloween. And yes, we do have school, and we do have football practice. Some of my kids were asking if we had football practice today on... It's Halloween. Do we have football? Yes, we have football practice on Labor Day, a day where nobody comes to work, and we have football practice. Of course, we have practice on Halloween. Silly kids. All right, so with us today is going to be C.J. Brown. He is a medic for the Houston Fire Department. He is a firefighter, paramedic, and he's been on the force for how long, C.J.?
Coming up on 13 years.
Coming up on 13 years. He is also the proud husband to Sarah Brown of 7 years. They have three boys, which they're going to be going out tonight in costumes all decked up trying to scare people out of their candy. He also has a Master's of Fitness and Human Performance, and he's the owner of Strength Nomad, which we'll talk about briefly, or we'll talk about here in just a minute. But before we get to that, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson.
Lorena.
Karen.
CJ.
Leslie.
Porcello. Suzette.
Claudia.
And then we got lots of other people doing lots of different jobs. And again, it's a little bit noisy on the recording, so hopefully it's not too noisy over there, and it'll get quieter in just a second. All right, so without much further ado, today is Leslie's birthday, so we're going to give her like a 2 second happy birthday to you,
Leslie.
All right, happy birthday, Leslie.
Thank you.
All right, before we get started with CJ, I'd like to talk real quick about a warm-up topic. So anybody watch college football this week or see pictures of the South Carolina athlete that dislocated his knee? Anybody?
Was it the one that was, like, all this way?
He was wearing a red jersey. He's
yes.
been on, like...
I saw it,
If
yes.
you look on Yahoo, it's been
yeah,
on
Yeah, I saw it.
Anybody else? It was on injury picks, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, then I saw it, too.
All right, so the thing is, it's a pretty grotesque injury. Like, when the guy got hit, and his legs, like, flapped over, and you see the side of his leg where it's, like, half ripped open because the lower part of the leg shoved out through the bone and then back. My thought is, you know, on ESPN or whatever channel it was, they replayed that. They re-showed it, and then they zoomed in on that. So that's like public TV, right? Is it proper or is it okay for them to show those grotesque injuries like that? What do you guys think? Should they replay and show and highlight those injuries over and over on the TV in the middle of a football game? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think so.
Why is that?
Because what if that person doesn't want anybody to see it and then it's all over the TV?
Yeah, like if the player is okay with it, like they can go ahead.
Get closer.
Oh. If the player is okay with it, they can go ahead.
So they should run down on the field, ask them, hey, is it okay if we show this?
Oh.
No, I'm just, you know, things we got to think about.
Maybe afterwards, like after the game, if they want to show on TV, like on the news or something.
All right, so what about the games when they're being broadcast live? Because, you know, most of those games are live so people can see, or just very little delay. What do you think? CJ, you can chime in at any time, too.
Yeah, it's one of those things that kind of has that wow factor. I think that's what TVs always want, you know, to give you that wow factor. But I'm kind of with y'all. I think out of respect to the player, probably wouldn't show it 865 times, you know, in slow motion from every angle. It probably wouldn't be for me, so. But, you know, TV always wants ratings, right?
Yeah, I heard somebody say one time, if it bleeds, it leads. So, you know, if it's something gory or something ridiculous, then it's going to be the top story. And so, I mean, for me as an athletic trainer, those things are good for me to see. They're beneficial because I can see that injury, and then if it happens here, then I have an idea of kind of what it is and what I should do, how I should treat it, those kind of things. But that's something I could look up. I mean, I could, you know, look at the story on the, you know, the Gamecocks website, athletic training. I'm sure they're going to put something, or I could contact somebody. Hey, what did y'all do about this? How did you take care of it? And so that's something I could find out, not just by watching ESPN replay and replay and replay and zoom in on that. On the deal. So, anybody else think it's good? What do you think, Claudia?
Oh, I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's between the line whether yes or no. So.
All right. Anybody else? So the grotesque injuries, those kind of things. Y'all are probably too young to remember when Willis McGahee hurt his knee at the University of Florida, but like if you see him flipped over and his knee, his leg just wobbles while he's in the air, he's getting flipped over or whatever it was. So those kind of things, for an athletic trainer, it's good. But my brother-in-law was like, dude, I don't even want to see pictures of it. He was cringing. I was like, it's not that bad. And so, I don't know, for me, it's like, where is the line? All right, so we're going to start a campaign. Claudia's going to lead it. Draw the line is what we're going to call it, all right? So look for it coming in the next 17 years. All right. Okay, none of you guys are 18, correct?
No, sir.
So you can't vote, right?
No.
CJ, you voted yet?
Not yet, I need to.
I think I might try and go today or tomorrow so I can get the early voting in. Don't want to wait till the last day. So early voting is going on right now. It's a monumental election. You got to vote on the principles on which you believe. So this is my plug for voting, which this will be actually the first time I've ever voted in my life. So it's with the, I guess a little bit of hypocritical thing I'm saying, go vote. But at the same time, I am planning to vote tomorrow. And so it's important. Up to this point, I don't think I've ever really cared or concerned myself with it. But now that I'm an adult, I have kids, I have family, and I have a future, I have to think about what's going to be going on. And so whatever you believe in, know it. Don't just vote because you like somebody's hair color or something. So, all right. Now we're going to get to CJ. CJ, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. My name is CJ Brown. I grew up actually right down the street over at, not down 225 in Deepwater, right there at Beltway and 225. I went to Deer Park High School. And seems like a long time ago now. I'm 35 now, so it has a little bit of time. After going to high school, I went to several colleges, and I ended up finishing finally. I was on the I had one victory year lap. You know, it took me 5 years. Don't do that, by the way. Just go to school. But after that, I got a degree in history. I thought for sure I was going to be a preacher. I'm going to be preaching to y'all every Sunday. But things changed, and I guess I ended up doing something a little bit different. I became a firefighter and a paramedic for the Houston Fire Department. It's a really great job, I have to admit. I've enjoyed it. I've done it for now, like I said, going on 13 years. My station is in the medical center right there on Station 33, right there where all the big hospitals are downtown. And so we stay pretty busy down there. But during that time, I started noticing a lot of sick people. Obviously, I make sick people all the time. And I just wanted to be a part of helping people before they got sick. So I went back to school, and I ended up getting a degree in fitness, where I wanted to kind of be a part of helping people to start taking care of themselves. I started thinking about it. I got 15, 20 minutes in the back of an ambulance with somebody, and they've made over a lifetime of bad decisions. So I had to fix almost a lifetime of problems within a 15 minutes. So I really wanted to start learning a little more about health and fitness and stuff like that. So I went back to school. But anyway, so after that, I also started doing some personal training, where I do a lot of I did some boot camps and fitness boot camps just on the side, just so I could kind of feel that passion of helping people before they got sick. So here I am now, like I said, 13 years in the game, seen a few sick people, seen a few injured people. I'll share a few of those stories with you. I know everybody likes to hear those stories. And it's been quite a career. So.
All right, so real quick, let me give you some terminology, because firefighters and medics, they tend to say they make. So we made a fire, we made a cardiac arrest. So what that means is we went on a call and took care of that person, or took care of that fire. So if CJ says, like earlier he said, we made a lot of sick people, they didn't make people sick. They went on calls where people were sick. So it took me a while to figure that out. So just understand, if he says that, that's because that's what he says all the time.
Sorry,
we made this
that
call. So it's all right. You wouldn't think about it because, you know, the people you're around know that. So, all right.
Can you give us a short story of your road to becoming a fireman / paramedic?
Sure. I don't know about you, but when I was your age, sitting in your chairs, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I really didn't. And, you know, I just knew that I couldn't handle sitting behind a job with a desk and a computer and not seeing the light of day for 8 hours every day. I knew I couldn't do that. And I had some friends that were, their parents were firefighters, and they started talking to me about that. And I went and met with them and talked to them. And they told me about some of the things that they did, some of the opportunities that they had. And it just, it really appealed to me. So after getting my degree in history, which prepared me for, I'm not sure what, but hey, I did it. And I applied to the Houston Fire Department, and I had graduated from college in the December, and then I started the fire department in March. The beautiful thing about the Houston Fire Department is they take care of all your education. So they sent me to EMT school, they sent me to fire school, and then they sent me to paramedic school. So even though a lot of times you can do that on your own, I was really fortunate to be paid to go to school. So you really can't beat that. So, but anyway, so that was 13 years ago, and I enjoyed. I'll tell you what. I'll give you a story real quick. I was dispatched to a call for a guy bleeding. That's what it came in as. And a guy was he had what they call a GI bleed, so he was vomiting a lot of blood. And I was an EMT at the time. Okay, so an EMT, there's differences. You have EMT and then you have paramedics. The EMTs do basic life support, CPR, bandaging, splinting, you know, things like that. The paramedic can push medications and start IVs and use the cardiac monitor and all that stuff. Well, anyway, on this one day, I had this patient that was bleeding. He was vomiting blood, and then he just kept vomiting blood, kept vomiting blood, kept vomiting blood, and I got really, really nervous. So, you know, like in the ambulances, they have those little windows, and I'm yelling through the window, go faster, go fast. I'm like freaking out. That's what you really want to see, right? The guy in the back of the ambulance freaking out when he's taking care of you. But I was brand new to I was a brand new firefighter, brand new paramedic. And I remember taking this guy to the hospital, and he was getting worse and worse and worse, and I hated the feeling of not being able to help him. And so that spurred in me to want to learn more. So that took me, and I said, okay, I'm going to sign up for paramedic school. And even though I am a firefighter and a paramedic, I do predominantly paramedic stuff in Houston Fire Department, and that just fell in love with emergency medicine, and I really just never looked back. So, but that call stemmed, it was like a turning point for me, and I really, it just instilled in me to want to learn more. Did I answer your question at all?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
What is your job description?
Wow. Okay, so anytime someone is going through any type of emergency, anything, you're sick, you're shot, you're in a wreck, your house is on fire, there's an explosion, there's anything you can think of where everyone else is running out and you see those crazy people that are running in, that's kind of my job description. So it's hard to paint a specific picture, but predominantly what we do is we help sick people, we help injured people, and we try to mitigate emergencies. And we it's a team sport. And when we get together, we try to work as a team and we try to fix the problem. And then if we can't fix the problem, what do we do? If you can't fix the problem, what would you do? I take it to someone that can. So I take them to the hospital where if I can't fix it, then I'll take it to a doctor or they need to go to the operating room or whatever to get that problem fixed.
All right, so I know a while back I kind of had a similar question for you. You know, what do you do? And you told me that you are the one that can make the call, hey, this guy is not going to come back, stop doing CPR. Is that correct?
For sure. Yeah. So, and that's a very tough decision. We make calls where there are times where a person meets a criteria that I notice that they can't sustain life, or there's no way I can get them to come back from what has happened. And yes, I have to make that decision. This person is gone. And that's something you have to be able to go home and lay on your bed and sleep on your pillow and make sure you made the right decision. So yeah, it's that's something that's very very challenging, very tough. But yeah, for sure.
So is that would a EMT, a basic EMT, they're not going to make that call, right? It's a paramedic that makes that.
Not necessarily. It's you can make that call, because to be honest with you, you don't have to have a monitor to make that call. You know, if a, it depends. So there's you have two types of patients. You have a medical patient and a traumatic patient. So someone that is maybe in cardiac arrest due to a medical condition. So for example, let's say in your instances, someone's out on a football field, or let's say you have a coach and he's having a heart attack and he goes into cardiac arrest. That would be a medical patient. Okay. Or you have a traumatic event occur, you have a car wreck, and someone's involved in a very severe car wreck, that's a traumatic event. There are different criteria for each one, and I make that decision on what I find with that patient. So, does that make sense?
Yeah. So.
Not an easy task all the time. An EMT, is at least where at my facility, can make that call because they... Because, like I said, they don't necessarily need a monitor to make those decisions. So, I don't want to get in too much detail. I don't know how much you really want to know, but it's one of those. You have to be very conservative, and you have to say, does this patient meet a criteria that a medical director has set in place? If they do, then you can make that decision. So.
Okay. Well, I really wanted to, I guess, bring that out, is that, you know, you're trained to and given the power to perform CPR and then also make the decision that, you know, this person doesn't have the signs or what you said the medical director has determined to be the potential. I don't know. Trying to choose my words wisely and then I get stumbled. They're not coming back. They're not going to make it. And so that's when you stop doing the CPR and basically from that point, would you typically still take them to the hospital, or you would, that's the point that the, not the morgue, but whoever.
Right. That's a good question. So it depends, you know, we always say no one ever dies in the back of an ambulance. They either die at home or they die at a hospital. Okay. So, there are times where we do take them to the hospital. There are times where we do even do CPR, and if nothing changes and the medical director allows it, we can actually even keep them, even after CPR, at home. If things, after we've kind of made the physician abreast of what's going on, they can help make that. They will make that decision, and then we will disseminate that information to the family and. So we can actually do CPR and all the things that we do on a medical call at home. And, you know, for example, let's say you have a patient that has chronic medical conditions, is elderly, we've done everything we can, nothing's changed. We'll talk to the family, and if everything meets the criteria per the physician, then we can leave them at home. And a lot of times that's helpful for the family, you know, because there's that sense of you're not at a hospital, you're at home, and then from then the police department takes over and you know, funeral homes and that stuff. So, but it as far as a traumatic call, it's a little bit different. If you go on a scene and someone has a traumatic event and they're in cardiac arrest, usually we don't do anything, because per the protocols of the medical direction, if they meet those certain criteria, we don't even start CPR with them. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just. It's a lot of power and responsibility. And, you know, we talked to Justin a week or so ago, and he was talking about, you know, you have a day on, a day off, a day on, and then 5 days off. And, you know, it sounds like a real good, easy job, but, I mean, you have to be able to walk into a fire, and you have to be able to pull somebody out, and then you have to be able to, as an EMT, possibly make the decision on whether or not you perform CPR on somebody and whether or not, you know, somebody's life is over or not. So it's just... Not right. As easy as some people might make it out to be.
And you don't have a lot of time to make that decision. You know, you have to make the decision very quickly, and you have to make the correct decision. So, yeah, it's something that comes with you know, this with experience and studying up what you need to learn from. So, but yeah, it's not always easy.
Okay, so real quick to kind of interrupt you, we have a listener from Arkansas right now. It's my guest from next week, Miss Mathis. Her and her class are kind of going to be on the show. We're going to be Skyping with them and doing some different things. So Chappie 1993 says hi from Arkansas. I'm not sure if that's a student and stuff like that. And so if you're still listening, Miss Mathis' class, then thanks for listening in, and we look forward to talking to you next week. And then, so that was that on that. So we have the Today's Meet going on. I forgot to mention that at the very beginning. Today'sMeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast, or there's a link on our website to that. So if you want to join in the chat, ask any questions of CJ or anybody else here, then you can jump in there. So, all right, now that we've talked a lot about the bad or the gruesome parts of your job,
can you tell us about one of your coolest experiences as a medic?
Sure. So one day I come on this call, and we roll up on this house, and I walk into the house, and there's a young mother. She's probably in her late 20s, and she's crying. You know, she's crying a lot. And I'm like, we make people crying all the time. I'm like, eh, okay, whatever. So I go past her, and I see her husband, and he's pretty calm. You know, he's not really flipping out too much. And I go in there, and the fire department is already there. The firefighters are already there, and they have a baby that's 1 month old, and they got the baby in the hand, and she's kind of red, but you can tell she's been coughing and stuff, and so they give me the baby, and you know, I kind of look at her and make sure she's breathing okay, and I'm listening to breath sounds, and you know, we're doing our thing, and she looks pretty good, and we take her to the hospital. No big deal, right? About 2 weeks later, we get a call, and let me remind you too. This is not the most ritziest part of town, by the way. That will come into play here in a minute. We get called out, and I pull up to the house, and I'm like, "Hey, this house looks familiar. I think I was just here." So this time, I walk into the house, and mom's crying again. Like, "Hey, I remember you from last time. You were crying. You're still crying, or what? You never stop crying." So then I see the dad, and he's crying. I'm like, "Okay, this may be a little bit different." And I see the captain on the fire truck, and he's not crying, but he's like, he has that look in his eyes like, "Oh my God, I'm glad to see you." And I look around, and there's a baby, the same baby. This time she's blue. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's game time, you know. So it's interesting. When people have babies that are sick, they run to you, and they just throw them in your arms, you know, like fix this, you know. And I'm like, okay, I'll fix it. So we start doing our thing, and, you know, I'm beating on her back, and I'm suctioning her out, and I'm thinking about intubating her. And what intubating is when you put a tube in someone's throat to help them breathe. So I don't have to do that. I end up doing my thing, and she ends up starts coughing, and, you know. But it was one of those ones that were a little bit stressful, you know. We make a lot of calls, but we don't make a whole lot of kids. So with the kids, you have – so it brings the stress level up. You have the stress of the mom and dad, too. So anyway, we take her back to the hospital. You know, everything ends up being fine. 2 weeks later, I get a call, kind of like this little dinging here, and I'm getting in my truck to leave, and I see the dad coming around the back of the station, fire station. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me! This girl is choking again," you know. And so he says, "May I speak to you?" Well, I'm about to go on a run, but I talked to my captain, and he said, "Why don't you let someone else take it? You can talk to him." So anyway, the guy goes out to his car, comes back, and he brings this like tray. It's probably about 2.5-3 feet by about 1.5 foot, full of desserts. Okay, like that's what firemen like, right? We love food. And he brings tons of desserts, and then these weren't cheap. You know, this is from a place over in Houston that I've been there before. You gotta pull out your wallet. It's not cheap. And so he brings these in desserts, and he sits down, and he's bawling, and he's just so thankful, you know, for what we did for his baby. And I could tell you tons of calls I've made. Just let's see. 2 days ago, I saved the guy. Guy went into cardiac arrest. I shocked him, came back to life. It was a cool thing, but nothing really compared. That was almost probably 8 years ago, and it still kind of chokes me up. What's interesting about this call is when the baby was, she was a month old. When she was a year old, he sends me a photo with a card and says, "You know, here's my baby girl. She wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for you." And so even though in this business, you know, that you get a lot of people that say, well, that's your job. You know, that's your job to take care of me. Or, you know, when you have someone that displays gratitude like that and just shows you that they're thankful for what you do, to me, it's one of the coolest things I've ever been through. So, but like I said, I mean, just 2 days ago, a guy who goes into, he's got chest pain, he goes into cardiac arrest, I shock him with the monitor, he comes back, we save his life. That was a cool thing, but to me, it was a lot cooler to have that dad, you know, have that connection with that father to say, hey, if it wasn't for you, my baby girl wouldn't be here. So that makes it special. So. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. I put on here, Sarah, I know, is listening online and said, don't cry, Sarah. I started tearing up whenever. That's tough. That's, wow.
Yeah, I had to be 8 years ago, and I was thinking about it on the way here, and I was like, it's like dusty in my car. So what's going on? So yeah, it was pretty special. So
that was before you were married, and so... Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you think about that story now that you have three boys at home.
It changes the game for sure, yeah. It makes even more of an impact.
Yeah. Yeah, like...
Aww. I want to cry now.
I think I'm just sweating. It's warm in here.
Yeah.
Okay, Jackson.
All right, so real quick, if Ms. Mathis' class is still listening, if you would just let us know either on the Today's Meet or on Twitter... If the sound is better, they said the volume was kind of low. Maybe it's just part of the new setup we have with the camera, switching angles and stuff. So if it is low, just let us know, and I'll do my best to crank it up again. Other than that.
Sorry.
Describe your typical weekly schedule.
Okay. our schedule pretty much rocks, I'd have to say that. Just like Jeremy said earlier, we work 24 hours, which people think, wow, that's bad. I mean, it's really tough. I have, let's see, cable TV, a workout room, you know, basketball in the back, a lot. I hang out with all my friends. It's not too bad, you know. And then I get to cruise around and, you know, with sirens and speed through the streets and help people. So it's a pretty awesome job. But we work 24 hours, and then I'll be off for 24 hours, and then I'll work another 24, and then guess what? I have how many days off?
Five
days off. So it's been really an awesome schedule. That allows me to work actually a second job, which some people can, some people can't. The reason I chose to do that is that it allows me to my wife to stay home with our children. We have three boys, so that way she gets to stay home with them. So I actually work quite a bit because of that second job, but it's still a pretty special little gig. Between that, I figured two jobs isn't enough. I wanted one more, so I took a job. I do fit personal training at my home. So, but you know, I enjoy doing that, so that's not too bad. So, but yeah, it's a pretty killer schedule. We go in about 6:30 in the morning, and we leave the next day at 6:30 in the morning. So, you just got to make sure that when you're driving home, you're not too tired. You know, you don't want to, you know, fall asleep while you're driving. So, after you've made maybe 20 runs or so, so. Did I answer your question, birthday girl?
Yes. Did you like get used to it? Like, you don't.
Yeah, for sure. At first, it was a little bit challenging, you know.
Staying up.
Yeah, and then now it's hard too, because on those 5 days off, it ain't like you can just, hey, I'm gonna go to bed at 9 and wake up because you've been up. Oh, excuse me. You've been up all night. So
yeah,
it takes some time. It's funny you say that. I spoke to a guy that had to go downtown. I guess he got promoted and he was waiting to get. So back in the suppression, which is out in the streets, in other words, and he was downtown working like at an office, and he was like, you know, working, you know, 8 to 5, and he's like, I realize I haven't really slept good in 10 years, you know. It's like he's like, this feels weird, you know, going home at 5 and going to bed. So yeah, you kind of have to, and that's something that's important. You have to be cognizant of, you have to be careful, because when you work a lot and you see stressful situations, you accumulate stress in your life. So you have to be able to handle that in a very healthy way. You know, you have to deal with that stress. You can't just keep suppressing it. So lack of sleep is something you have to take care of. So you have to take care of your body. You, rule number one, and you guys know this as far as being in this business, you can't help anybody if you're not healthy. You know, you have to first take care of yourself. So, happy birthday.
Thank you.
What is one of the hardest things of your job?
hardest things, all right. No crying this time, guys.
Let's see.
You want to cry?
All right,
you can cry.
I'm emotional.
I think the thing you have to, couple things. One is you can't save everybody, okay? And you'll start to realize, especially in cardiac arrest, the majority you won't save, you know? And you can't take that personal. You have to just go out there and do the best that you can, you know? Kind of like in sports, you just have to leave it all out there. You don't want to just be, you want to take every call seriously. You want to put everything you have into it. So when you go back to the dorm and you lay your head down on that pillow, you know, hey, I did everything I could, you know. You know that, you remember that movie, what's that movie? The Guardian, he's got...
Is that Ashton Kutcher's a lifeguard?
Yeah.
Or not a lifeguard, Coast Guard.
He's in the Coast Guard. Anyway, he says, you know, Kevin Costner tells him, you know, I save the one I can and I let the sea take the rest. And that's what you could do. I mean, you just do the best that you can. And if you know that you did everything you could, there's really, you have nothing to be ashamed or, you know, feel bad about. The other thing that's hard is kids, you know. Seeing a kid that's hurt, injured, sick, abused, you know, that, especially like Jeremy was saying now, that being a father, you relate to that even more impactfully. So I think that's probably one of the toughest things. Here's one other thing I wanted to mention. I get frustrated with maybe someone that doesn't want to help themselves. For example, let's say someone's having a problem with their breathing or they're having chest pain, and I know this person. I've made calls to this person multiple times, and they keep doing the same thing. That's a frustrating part of my job. It's like, I want to help you, but help me help you, you know. So that's a little bit frustrating too. But I think the hardest thing, like I said, is trying to learn how to deal with some of the stress of making those tough decisions and realizing you can't save everybody. You just do the best you can, and then trying to get through, trying to help kids and seeing a kid severely injured. It's very impactful. So. Man, let's get on to some happy questions. Are there any?
we're gonna change topics for just a second.
Okay, good.
Tell us about your strength nomad.
Okay.
Nomad.
So, you know, I've been making these calls, and I'm making sick people all the time. And like I said earlier, I just said, you know what? I've got 10, 15 minutes to fix 40, 50, 60 years of poor decisions. That's very tough. So I thought, well, what can I do to be on the other side of that game? And so I went to college, and I went back to school, and I ended up getting a master's degree in fitness and human performance. And so Strength Nomad, what it is everybody's busy, right? I know you guys are busy. You have school, you have work, you have friends, you have all kind of stuff, right? Well, no one seems to have time. Like the biggest excuse for not working out is, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. So I developed this concept of Strength Nomad, saying that you can work out wherever you are. Okay? So that's the principle of the Strength Nomad. You don't have to drive to a gym, and you don't have to go to a weight room, that you can work out with the things that you have right where you are. And so I started this website, strengthnomad.com, plug, and then I started this business with boot camps. And mainly the gist of it is I teach a lot of unconventional strength training. So, you know, we swing in kettlebells. You've seen those, right? The big cannonball with the handle on it. You've ever seen those before? Maybe, maybe not. We have them lifting cinder blocks. We have them lifting sandbags. You know, whatever's around them, I'll have them lift or have them doing body weight push-ups or whatever. And so I just wanted to instill in people that there's no excuse anymore. You know, you can work out wherever you are, you know. Even the principle goes to everyday life. Okay, you come up on a stairs or elevator, you know.
Stairs.
Exactly. You get a choice, you know. And just by moving through the day, you're getting exercise. And so much of our life is right here. We sit here. What, right? We sit on our computers, we drive our cars, we eat, we all sit in these little chairs, you know, but we were created to move around. So that's what my passion is, to get people moving and to say, hey, you don't need a fancy gym. You don't need a, you know, expensive membership. You don't have to have expensive equipment. You don't have to have this, you know, state-of-the-art shoes. It doesn't really matter. You can just train where you are, enjoy what you're doing, get outside, you know, and, you know, throw some kettlebells around, swing some sandbags, whatever you want to do. Place chase with your with your dog. It doesn't matter. But that's kind of the principle. And so what I wanted to do was not only be a part of helping people that were sick, but just try to see what I could do to assist them to keep from ever having to see me in the back of an ambulance. So, sound good?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's non-conventional weightlifting. So it's not you go put on the 25-pound plate. It's just all this other different stuff. And I think it's real cool. And I've kind of gotten into some of that CrossFit type stuff. But it's just something different, something to challenge you a little bit more. And like you were saying, something that's a little bit more realistic. Because CJ's never going to lift a bar with a 45-pound weights on the end of it at work, but he may lift, you know, a 200-pound person onto the gurney, which is like a sandbag. So
yeah, I haven't been to a fire yet and seen a weight set. I haven't seen one yet. So, you know, it's important to train in those, to, you know, practice how you play, you know, right? So when you train in that environment, it helps prepare you for what, you know, what the unknowns are. So and I think the other part of it is play. You know what I mean? I get tired of 4 sets of 12 or 3 sets of 10. It's like, I just want to go play. You know, let me just go outside. And like the other day, this summer, my boys and I went to the beach and, you know, there was a big sand dune. So what do? We ran up it and we were pirates and we ran down it and ran up it. My boys are 4, 3, and 1. So that's what we were doing. That's what they're into right now. And so did I count my resting heart rate and my max heart rate? And did I work on, you know, did I see how many times I did it? And no, I just went out there and had fun. And so that's the other part of it. You know, a lot of times we get so caught up in the perfect workout that we kind of have that, I call it analysis by paralysis. You see, you're searching the perfect workout for what your needs are. Just go out and enjoy it. You know, go out and do something you enjoy, have fun, and you'll get moving. And that's kind of, I guess, my philosophy. It's kind of like playing instead of working out, you know. So it makes, and you'll stick with it, you know. That's what's just important. So.
All right, very good.
Yeah, careful. I'll talk about Shrink Nomad longer than a paramedic because I really have a passion for it. So.
All right, so the topic of this one was the sports medicine team, because at pretty much all varsity football games, we have an EMT or medics at the games, and we... You know, we've had to call EMS here before for a broken femur, and so.
Have you worked as a paramedic at a football game?
I have not. The Houston Fire Department doesn't do private stuff like that. However, we make our share of Reliant right there at the Reliant field a lot, you know. But I've made, you know, many sports injuries, but I've never been assigned to the game. But I'll go into the next question. Let's go to the next question. I'll answer some of those more. But no, I have not to answer that.
All right. So those guys that do, you said that's typically an independent company, not like the Houston Fire Department.
Correct. A lot of times they will. I think it just they'll have a contract with the school, and a lot of times it will be private agencies, and I don't usually work those. And I'm really grateful for them, because that keeps me from running to the stadium all the time. And when my station's right down the street from where the Texans play, you know. Although I wouldn't mind going in there, you know, to be honest with you. But they have their own crews that are, you know, that are have a contract with the team. So the only time we would go is maybe to if they can't transport, they'll bring the patient out to us, you know, and then we'll transport them from there. They'll transfer care, and we might take them, but. For the most part, they have their own facility, their own, you know, contracted ambulance company. So,
all right. So those guys, say the ones that are going to be at our game this Friday night, do they typically have that you know of any sort of special training to deal with, you know, football players, you know, wearing all the pads and equipment and that kind of stuff?
Right. Yeah. I'm as far as their initial training, I don't think so. But as, they may have their own special training as far as working with the schools and understanding that. you know, a lot of times when you make specialty patients, you do have to have a little bit of extra training as far as either if it's on the job or just critical care training. But as far as I know, I don't think they do. Sorry.
Okay.
But they do have it. I mean, the thing is, though, most of these companies are the same company, so they have experience dealing with these type of injuries.
Okay.
In your opinion, what can we do to improve Closer. Communications or care of athletic injuries between athletic trainers and EMS?
Okay. Let me just say that every person in a patient's chain is important of care in their healthcare. Okay? So what I mean, let's say a guy is out on the field and he breaks his leg. Okay? So you make initial contact with him and you'll call the paramedics and that's the next chain. And the paramedics will take him to the ER and that's kind of his next chain of healthcare. And then he might go to a floor, and then eventually he might follow up with a rehab like physical therapy or occupational therapy. Every person in that chain is important, okay? And I'll tell you something interesting. When we make a mass casualty incident, let me explain that, and I'll explain why this is important. When we make a mass casualty incident, when we get to a scene, and let's say there's like 30 people that need to be taken to the hospital, you can talk to anybody in emergency operations and they'll tell you the first person on scene sets the stage for the whole incident. Okay? If they come in and don't do what they're supposed to do, the whole incident is kind of, it goes chaotic. But if they set up a good foundation, then everything runs a lot smoother. The same is true, take that analogy, and same is true for this guy that broke his leg. You guys make the initial contact with him. You have the ability to set the stage for a great, great chain of events. I think the thing I wanted to stress to you is that what you do initially is so important, just as important as every other person's link in the chain. As far as helping us, let's say I'm a paramedic and I come up and you've got an injured patient. How can you help me? Is that the question that we're looking for? I think it was. So I think the best way you could help me as far as if I'm coming on a scene is to set it up initially and prepare and where. But if you can set that foundation that we were talking about, like with the mass casualty, and you can start getting that gathering information, okay? So not only do you do your initial care where you start to splint them, you start to take care of them, you get them immobilized, and you start the initial patient care. But if you can gather as much information about that patient, and you that way when the paramedics get there, for example, here's his medical problems he's had in the past. Here's some allergies that he has. Here's some medications that he takes. This is the event that led up to what happened. This is what we did for him. You know, if you can have all that for the paramedics when they get there, it really helps things for that patient to go smoother, and it creates a chain of events that makes it most successful. Our goal, right, is to get him off that field and get him back on the field, right? And so with that being said, when your initial contact, I want you to know, is so vital and so important, and you can set up a great opportunity for him to have a recovery when you make that initial care. Anyway, so I think that's the best thing you can do is just do what you guys do best. To be honest with you, you probably know more than I do about how to do soft tissue injuries because you do them even more than me sometimes. Even though a lot of times I'm there, a lot of times when we make especially sports events, I'll get there and I'm like, man, everything's done. There's nothing for me to do but just put them on an ambulance and go, and I'm so appreciative of that. For example, one thing I do make a lot of on my side job, I make a lot of motocross injuries. There's a motocross, dirt bikes and stuff. And we'll get there, and you know, there's people that are already on scene that have just pretty much done everything. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I'll push a little pain medicine and give them a ride, you know, because you've done everything. And what that does is that helps that patient the best way, and that sets that chain of events to have him to have a successful recovery and get him back on the field. So, but I think that's important is to respect every person that's a part of that chain and to be a vital, especially as the initial contact, you set the stage for his care. And so if, when you do that, you do it in a professional manner, and you present the information that you've collected, and you present it to the EMT, that's huge. Because I want you to think about this. You're there. You see it. You know what I mean? The guy, the rehab guy, he doesn't get to see it. So he kind of depends on what you saw, what information was transferred, and as long as accurate transferred information, by the time he gets to the rehab place, they know exactly everything that happened, so they can further better his care. So I want you to know that every step in that chain is important, so especially as the first person on scene.
So if I was to summarize that, it would be to just basically communicate to say, hey, this is what I've done. You know, if there's a possibility, then you can write it down and give it to them, but, you know, communicate clearly, this is what I've done for this patient or this athlete or this person so far. And then when I hand it off to the EMS, they have all the information that I had up to that point. So then you can communicate that up the chain.
True. And it can also help me to my patient care of what I need to do or not do or what's already been done, you know. You know, I'll tell you, a frustrating thing for a patient is to answer questions 6 different times, you
mm-hmm.
know. They've already answered them 6 different times, but if we can transfer the information, it really helps them a lot. And like I said, when you can tell me what you saw, that helps me. That helps the ER doctor, which helps the rehab guy. So, yeah, it's all about communication. I want to say one other thing, too, and this is about a really critical patient. Okay, so let's say you have a patient that, heaven forbid, a student or a faculty going to cardiac arrest out on that field. I've been doing this a long time, okay? And I'm telling you, from my experience, paramedics, they save people, yeah, but we're not the ones that really make the biggest difference. It's the people that are on scene and what was done prior to us getting there is what makes the difference in these people's lives. And what I'm trying to say is, it's been my experience that people that received bystander CPR, bystander AED, prior to me getting in my truck, driving over there, unloading all my stuff, getting out to the field, and then taking care of the patient. That was good, but what was done before I got there makes the biggest impact. So you being on scene, knowing where your AED is, knowing how to do CPR, is vital for that person. Does that make sense? So I can push all the drugs in the world, but if they didn't get bystander CPR, they didn't get a bystander AED, I'm so much more behind the eight ball. It's so much harder for me. Does that make sense? So you being on scene are, in my personal opinion, can make one of the biggest, if not the biggest impact on that patient, especially a very critical patient. So know where those things are. Know how to do it. Know what you need to do. Have it in your mind before the game. It's fun to go out there and, you know, kind of have fun, but have in your mind, if something happens, do I know where I need to do? Do I know where I need to be? Do we have a plan? You know, and having that plan ready, because that's going to make the biggest impact.
All right. So that's pretty cool, because when we were watching the CPR, doing all this, the training, because all these kids in here are CPR certified, and I was just working on putting them into the Red Cross yesterday, but I was having trouble. So I'm working on getting their CPR cards. They have their CPR masks. One of the things was the cardiac chain of survival, which is early access to EMS, early CPR, early AED, and there's early something else, but I can't remember what it was. There's 4 things. And so, you know, that's easy for us to see on the video. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's just what they're telling us. But, I mean, here you are 13 years in the field, and you're telling us the thing that really saves a life is the early CPR and stuff like that.
No doubt. The American Heart is starting to see that even patients that are just receiving CPR without drugs are still, I don't want to quote something that may not be accurate, but it seems like I remember hearing them saying, like, even some receive drugs, some doesn't, and even the change is not that much different, but those that received early CPR, that made the biggest impact. The reason I saved that guy 2 days ago was because I saw him go into cardiac arrest. So what did I do? Started CPR. And I don't have an AED, but I have a monitor that does the same thing as AED. I did early CPR. I shocked him. Next thing, he's up talking to me. It's a really funny story because he says, I shock him. He goes, and he goes, I'm glad to see you. And I was like, I bet you are. You were just dead. So, yeah. But because I was on the scene, started initial CPR, started AED, or, you know, started defibrillation, early defibrillation, I got him right back. He was 92 years old. So, you know, it goes to show you that, hey, this stuff works, you know. But it's all about who's on scene that makes the biggest difference. In my personal opinion, that's what I've noticed in this, my experiences.
Right, very cool. If you will, y'all just set, you can set your headphones on the chair. It is time for them to go. If you'll thank Mr. CJ, and then I'm going to have a few more questions for CJ while you guys just set them on the chair. That's the next question. All right, so CJ, we've talked about, you know, how important it is to be the first responder, but what can I do as an athletic trainer to help build the relationship with those? Because I know you haven't worked those, but to build the relationship with the EMS, EMT people that are at the games, that are so that they understand that, you know, I'm an athletic trainer, I'm trained to, you know, I'm a professional rescuer, and at the same time, that's their job also, is to transport, to splint, to care for those injuries. What can I do to build that relationship with them, even if it's not the same people every week?
Yeah. You know, I think you could always offer, you know, some type of joint venture where you meet with each other and, you know, you learn what each other do, where you could learn from each other. That's always a great opportunity. One of the things I think is you could also do is just, when you do encounter them, ask questions, you know, go down there to the games and say, hey, you know, what, how can we better assist you? What are some things? And just poke questions. And then, and as an EMT being down there as a paramedic, I'd probably ask you a question. Hey, what's the best way to do this, that, or the other? Because like I said, we can all learn, you know, from each other. So I think either you can set up some type of deal with, like, where you could meet with each other, but more tangible and easier is just going down there, getting familiar with people, asking questions. And then what I think would be even better too is if you can set up a plan. Hey, if something happens today, here's where we're going to meet. This is what we're going to do. What can we do to help you? You know, and that way. So I think when you have that professionalism and you have that plan, and not everybody's like an independent worker, but you're working as a team. Because like I said, I feel like I'm just as part of a team as the physical therapist. You know, we may not know each other, but we're all encountering this patient. And so I think just poking questions, asking, and being a part of will help build that relationship, and communicating that relationship, the importance of each person that's a member of that chain. So.
All right. So again, communication, asking questions, but rather than, you know, I typically I'll say hi or wave when we go by, but, you know, just stopping for a second. Hey, I'm Jeremy. I'm an athletic trainer. You know, you guys have any questions for us as far as if we have an injury? And then, you know, just basically asking questions, say, hey, this is who we are. Is there anything that you need from us? Or this is, you know, maybe saying, hey, this is kind of what I expect. You know, if we need you, or we'll call you over and we'll go from there, you know. So how can we best work together? So something along those lines of that set of questions.
For sure. I think so. And I think we always have to remember it's not about us. It's about that patient. And having a plan and being all on the same page pays big dividends for that patient, you know. So, in this business, there are egos, you know, and so you have to work through those. But if you can just kind of put all that aside and say, you know, how can we better assist each other? When the emergency happens, it's not as big an issue. So I can't stress enough, you practice. If you could ever do something, maybe even another option, I don't know if they would be willing to, but if you could set up scenario where, hey, you know, where you all work together and we set up a mock emergency.
So like a training or a...
Correct.
Mock scenario.
Yeah, so that would be awesome if you could ever set that up with a school or whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, I know I've had Justin come in last... 2 years ago, and he showed us how, you know, you guys would do the spine boarding and stuff like that, and yeah, how basically you use like duct tape to tape them on instead of the straps that come with the board and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I was like, whoa, you know, that's kind of crazy. But he showed us, you know, showed us some cool different stuff that you guys do, and so it was an eye opener for me. But it's nothing like spine boarding an athlete with pads on, and so
right, very different. And like I said, we could learn a lot from each other on how do y'all do it? What, okay, well, because we don't make, especially if we're not assigned to that, we don't make a lot of football injuries. So if we, you know, when we do make it, when we do make a call like that, it would be better. We will be better prepared as well. So, you know, to have someone that's experienced with that. So
very cool. Very cool. You're talking about theirs, like arrogance and attitude. And again, I want to go ahead and preface this. This was not in any way CJ or Houston Fire Department. This was a private company, but I was working an event. It's a volleyball tournament at the George R. Brown. So there's, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 kids. I don't know. But the EMT that they had there, he was like, well, if there's anything, if anybody needs anything more than a tape job, then you can send them over to me. And I'm thinking, dude, I'm a licensed athletic trainer. My job is to take care of athletic injuries. I'm not just here to put tape and band-aids on people. And so my question is, you know, because you know me, you know what athletic trainers do, but do you think in general EMT, EMS people have an idea of what athletic trainers do?
No, I don't think they do at all. You know, and just like for a while, you know, there are people that tell us, your job as a paramedic is just, you know, just take me to the hospital. That's what you do. That's all you do. You know, you're an ambulance driver. And so, yeah, and that's unfortunate. And that's what's so good about seeing the whole chain of events, because learning from each other and learning, because we have our specialties and we have what we're good at. And I could probably draw tons of information from just walking around with y'all in a couple of games and learn, hey, I haven't been splinting these patients like I should have, you know, that these guys do. And or like I said, you know, the other things that you do as far as early CPR and all that stuff is vital. And so, yeah, if we could just learn to realize, hey, it's not about us. It's about the team. It's about the patient. It's about how can we better serve them. But, yeah, I would say in general, there are probably a lot of misconceptions about athletic trainers and what they really do. So, yeah, it's important to stay, you know, to be a part of communicating that and, you know, being on the same page with the patient care treatment. So,
all right. So kind of what I'm hearing is, if we want to improve the communication with the sports medicine team, then we need to communicate. So you know, stopping, you know, if it's game day, and so this week we're going to be at Alvin, obviously those guys aren't going to typically come to my game. So I'm probably not ever going to see them again unless we go play Alvin again next year, because Alvin's, you know, 45 minutes from here. So I just stop by when I see the ambulance. Hey, you know, I'm so-and-so, you know, I'm the athletic trainer. If you need something, you know, if you have questions about what we do or that, then, you know, come let me know. Or, you know, is there anything you guys need from me? And then, you know, just go on about working the game. And then that way I've at least established a who I am and what we do, and open the door for them to ask questions or for me to ask questions. So, again, it's communicating. And then I really like the idea. I'm thinking maybe one of our staff development days, because typically as athletic trainers here, we have our own, we don't meet with the rest of the school as a department, because we're kind of our own department. Maybe we could set up something to where, you know, all the athletic trainers go to the stadium and we have, you know, a crew of EMS members come over and we all take turns, you know, spine boarding somebody with pads on or something like that. And so that's a really good idea. I think I'm going to look into that and talk to our head guy and see if maybe that's something we can get set up for, you know, this year or next year, because it could only benefit both parties and ultimately the patient, like you said. So very cool. That's a good idea. I like that, CJ. And I think on that, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Any final parting thoughts?
Sure. I think the only thing I would stress is that whether you're an athletic trainer, whether you're a firefighter, whether you're a nurse, doctor, you know, any kind of healthcare provider, a couple of things that I've learned and I feel like they're important to leave on a note is, I would do a couple things. One, treat everyone like family. You know, in this business, it's easy to get, especially in my business, you're making 15, 20 calls a day, you get kind of burnt out. But if you can try to treat people with respect and compassion, I think that goes a long ways. I realized when I got out of paramedic school, I wasn't the best intubator. I wasn't the best at IVs. I wasn't the best at reading an EKG. But I knew that, you know, I could always treat people with compassion and respect. And so I've tried, not always, sometimes at 3 a.m. my compassion does fade a little bit. But, you know, I've really tried to keep that and try to treat people with, you know, because you're going to see people, especially in my business or even out here, at their worst. They're in pain. They're and you can't, and it's not just the patient. You know, you have the family and you have bystanders and you just want to treat every, you know, you have the EMTs and you, or whoever you come in contact with, but treating them with, you know, with respect and treating people like family, I think is important. The second thing I would just wanted to leave with people is that no matter what you do, but especially in healthcare, because it's always changing, you know, things we did 5 years ago, we are not doing, they're obsolete now. And so, always be humble to learn from other people. You know, always be learning, have that teachable spirit, you know, all throughout your career or, you know, wherever you are, whether you're, you know, you're 16 or 60, always be trying to learn something new because all you can do, like you said, is better help the patient and better help the outcome of them. And so as we do research, evidence-based research, and we learn more things, we learn new things, you know, you want to apply those things, you know. You got that, I always think of like weightlifting because everything goes back to weightlifting with me. But, you know, you always got that coach that's like, we work out this way because that's the way I did it. And that's the way his coach did it and his coach. And it may not necessarily be this, but if you can be constantly learning and be humble enough to know that you don't know everything and to learn to draw on these different specialties, like me learning from you guys how to better splint or how to better, you know, take care of especially a lot of soft tissue injuries or spinal mobilization, you know, with specialty patients or athletic patients. You know, it's huge. So I think always be learning and always treat people with, you know, with compassion, I think would probably be the biggest thing because you're going to get better with experience. But you got to always keep that attitude in check, I guess. So, and always treat people with respect. So.
Fantastic. All right, so with that, I'm going to close out. I think it says we still have two live viewers, and the kids are gone, so there's nobody checking Twitter or the Today's Meet. Jonah's saying hi, Daddy. My beautiful wife plays it on the TV that's projector at our house, so hi, Jonah Bear.
hi, Jonah.
There you go.
Hi, Sarah.
We have a couple people that support us, and I've talked before about the school district's education foundation. They do a ton of stuff. We have a big basketball tournament coming up, the McDonald's Invitational, that is a huge fundraiser for the event, and that's the reason we have the majority of this stuff. And you know, people donate like Dr. Amber Lowe did through Donors Choose, and so those people and organizations that are set up to help teachers empower their students. I think this is one of the things that I've been able to do that's really, like these kids, I mean, they're hearing so much, and, you know, they're going through a CPR training, but getting to talk to CJ and they're realizing how important it is. I mean, this guy's been in doing EMT stuff as long as some of them have been alive, and they're realizing, you know, he says that they're probably more important in saving somebody's life than he is really hitting, you know, home in a way that I couldn't tell them. And so, you know, it's awesome for me to be able to do this and talk to these people and bring these professionals in to talk to these kids. And so a big part of that is because of the Pasadena ISD Education Foundation and what they make available for us. Of course, Memorial Hermann, I'm wearing the shirt. If you can see, I don't think you can see it in the live stream, but they got the logo on the back of my shirt. They do a ton of stuff to support us. And apparently Houston Fire Department is also supporting us because we had Mr. Justin come last week and or 2 weeks ago, and we got CJ now. So that's support from the fire department. My words of wisdom I'll steal from CJ is treat each person with compassion and as an individual and not just as somebody to transport or, you know, just another run at 2 a.m. or whatever. Treat each person as an individual with compassion. So if you'd like to contact us, of course, our website has plenty of ways to do that, www.pasadenaisd.org/phs/athletic-training. There's the links for the Ustream. We haven't been doing the Justin TV because we've been doing the different camera angles, so maybe if I can get a new computer, new laptop going in sometime soon, then we can do the Justin TV again, but we're just going with Ustream for now. Twitter, PHS Sports Med, which we had some Twitter conversations going on today. Google Plus is PHS Athletic Training. Facebook.com /PHS Athletic Training. The office phone, 713-740-0310, extension 01312. And then I've been talking about the app, but I checked it just the other day, and it didn't have, like, the last three episodes. So I don't think it's updating anymore because I'm not paying for it. So if you downloaded the app, then I don't know. If it works, good. If it doesn't, oh, well. Delete it. That way it's not taking up space or memory on your deal. So for Jeremy, the rest of the Sports Medicine crew, and CJ, that's a wrap.